From KQED in the California Newsroom, this is a live Inauguration Day special. I'm Scott Schaefer. Over the next hour, we'll talk about the second presidency of Donald Trump, especially what impact it could have on us here in California. We'll be hearing from reporters around the state, and we really want to hear from Californians like you about your hopes and fears for the next 4 years. You can reach us at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. Or you can email your comments and questions to politics@kqed.org, and you can find us on social media, Blue Sky, Instagram. We're at KQED. Trump was sworn in this morning inside the U.S. Capitol. His inaugural address was partly a recitation of familiar themes, promising to crack down on illegal immigration, end diversity and inclusion policies, expand oil drilling, and an attack on the rights of transgender people. Here is a short excerpt from that address.
My recent election is a mandate to completely and totally reverse a horrible betrayal and all of these many betrayals that have taken place, and to give the people back their faith, their wealth, their democracy, and indeed their freedom.
President Donald J. Trump speaking today from the U.S. Capitol after he was sworn in. Our reporters across the state have been talking to Californians about the Trump presidency, and here's what a few of them had to say.
I feel like we're getting a Trump 2.0 at this point, and I don't know what to expect. I think it just affects everyone in some way.
I am beyond excited. I'm just a huge Trump fan. I like to call myself a recovering liberal.
I just saw the president mention mass deportation starting on Tuesday, so that brings a lot of anxiety. Not for me, but just like my family and friends from Glendale.
I have a lot of anxiety and am kind of an impending doom feeling.
I'm feeling unsafe. I'm queer, so yeah, my partner and I are scared. Yeah, terrified.
I come from a family of immigrants that came here from the Philippines, and we are for coming here the right way. We believe in strong border policies.
We grew up out here. None of the presidents that's in office, they don't really change, or changes they make don't affect me. Oakland's going to be Oakland. California will always be California.
There you hear it, some voices from across the Golden State today, a mixture of excitement, fear, uncertainty, anxiety. Trump, the 45th and now the 47th president of the United States, the first since Grover Cleveland in the 19th century to serve two non-consecutive terms. Here with me for the hour is KQED politics correspondent and my co-host on Political Breakdown, Marisa Lagos. Hey, Marisa.
Hey, Scott.
Well, you know, this event today, it's always so historic just to watch the images. And we saw Biden and Trump ride over together, something that didn't happen when Trump was sworn in the first time. We saw former presidents and first ladies. So there was a kind of an air of normalcy until the speech, when we got to back to some of the division, partisanship, grievances and so on.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, this felt more like a State of the Union, or I wouldn't say campaign speech, because it was more muted. And you can see how the new president really does enjoy more talking off the cuff, as he did a short while later to supporters. But this was a break. I mean, he used it to both attack the Biden administration very directly, and then also to lay out some very specific policies that he says he's going to enact today, including ending birthright citizenship and asylum, you know, a litany of things around DEI and gender and energy policy. So more specifics, I would say, than I think we're used to seeing an inaugural speech. It was not as dark as his 2017
American Carnage
speech, but it definitely hit some of those same tones. And it was very much about him as a person, as a leader. He talked about the golden age of America beginning again, and he said that he believes his life was saved in that horrific assassination attempt last year in Pennsylvania to make America great again, that God intervened to do so.
Yeah, and there was more than you might expect, injection of just raw politics, you know, talking about winning all of the swing states and winning the popular vote. This is Trump. And, you know, we've learned since 2015 that there's only one Donald Trump. He doesn't switch gears and go from candidate to president-elect to president. It's really kind of the same thing. And as you mentioned, he's going to be, issuing some of these executive actions, some of which, you know, we've already heard about, some of which no doubt will surprise us. And, you know, here in California, in many ways, we are at the epicenter of so many of these actions, certainly when it comes to immigration, mm-hmm. the environment, abortion access, transgender rights. And so there is sort of a feeling that California is going to be a bit in the crosshairs in the next 4 years.
I mean, absolutely. I know we're hoping to hear from our attorney general later in the hour, but I already just got a statement, for example, from San Francisco City Attorney David Chu promising to go to court for what he said he expects to be a flurry of harmful, divisive and illegal executive orders, and that they'll do what they, you know, what they can legally to protect the citizens of San Francisco. So, I mean, there's definitely a different tone this time from Democrats writ large. I think that there is, you know, I saw Adam Schiff put out a statement today, didn't mention the pardon that outgoing President Joe Biden issued to the members of the January 6th committee, who included Schiff, who Trump has repeatedly named as an enemy of the people. Schiff said, I'll work with Trump when there are good ideas, when there are opportunities. And so I think California, you know, up to our governor and members, you know, of Congress and the Senate, like Adam Schiff, are kind of bracing themselves both for a fight ahead, but also trying not to be the ones that pick that fight, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's go to Washington now. And Faith Pino, reporter with the Los Angeles Times, is standing by. And Faith, I believe you were in Emancipation Hall this morning. What was the speech like? What was the tone? What are you hearing? What are your impressions? That's like five questions, but pick one.
No worries. Well, just a quick correction. I wasn't inside the hall. I wasn't able to get in. There was a bit of a flurry of press access over the weekend once they moved the inauguration indoors. So I was actually outside talking to people who were trying to get into the overflow live stream at Capital One Arena a few blocks away. But managed to also get into a live stream at a hotel nearby and watch the speech from there. Echoes of what you all are saying. I mean, I think there was a lot in there that can affect Californians. I think something that struck me about the tone was that it really did, to me, sound like a lot of his campaign promises. I covered him a lot on the trail the past year and a half. And, you know, a lot of the things that he would say at his rallies, he said right there in his speech. And it really sounded akin to his stump speech. And something that I think was a marked difference from his inauguration speech 4 years ago is that he is a lot more confident this time. You know, the last time he came, he was really a newbie to Washington, D.C. This time he has completely been around the ropes, both in the executive branch. He's also had a bit of a tour of the judicial branch here lately with his court hearings. And he now has a Republican Congress, you know, both the House and the Senate. So he's coming in with fully stocked and loaded and ready to make some changes.
You were outside talking with some of the presumably supporters of Donald Trump. That's typically who comes to these inaugurations. Although some people do come, I think, just for to witness history, no matter who is being sworn in and from which party. But I'm curious, what did you hear? Did you meet many Californians out there?
I did. In fact, I was surprised. I talked to a lot of people when I was out there, and almost everybody I ran into happened to be from California. I don't know how that happened. I guess we're a pretty big state. There were a lot of people who came in for the weekend. They had booked their tickets as soon as Trump won the election, and then were pretty disappointed to find out that they actually couldn't see the inauguration because of it moving indoors. And, you know, some of them that I talked to said that they were heartbroken that they weren't able to see it. But others said that they were there just for the vibes. You know, the Trump rally and a Trump event brings a lot of like-minded people together, and it can be a lot of camaraderie and a lot of excitement. Especially there were a couple of Californians I talked to. One of them was named Barry Kahn. It was his first Trump event that he'd ever been to. And he said he was really surprised to see, you know, how normal people were. He said he thought they were painted as extremists in the media. And it was really nice for him to meet sort of like-minded people there, especially since he's such a, he called himself part of the MAGA minority in California.
Faith, the president, I was going to say president-elect, but he is now the president. He did make reference to the fires in Los Angeles. Let's hear a little bit of what he said there.
Or more recently, Los Angeles, where we're watching fires still tragically burn. From weeks ago, without even a token of defense, they're raging through the houses and communities, even affecting some of the wealthiest and most powerful individuals in our country, some of whom are sitting here right now. They don't have a home any longer. That's interesting.
What did you make of that comment? Of course, Los Angeles is still very much in the midst of those terrible fires. The winds are picking up again today. Certainly, the danger is not over. And there's some word that Trump may visit Los Angeles on Friday. I'm just wondering, you know, what did you make of the tone of his comments about LA and the fires there?
Yeah, you know, it really foreshadows this fight that he has had, an ongoing fight with California's liberal leadership at the forefront. You know, is obviously Governor Newsom, but also to a lesser extent, LA Mayor Karen Bass. And, you know, pretty much as soon as the fires ignited, I mean, the politicization of the disaster began. And, you know, Trump and Newsom have had this long feud. It goes back years. Governor Newsom had called together this special legislative session to sort of Trump-proof the state legally from his executive orders to come. And now, you know, California and Southern California is in a disaster mode and needs federal aid and federal help. And so, you know, I think that was a clear jab at California's leadership. And it's something that I heard echoed among some of the Californians that I talked to in the crowd. One of them was actually had previously lived in Pacific Palisades. And he said that, you know, his group of Republican friends, everyone thought that the LA disasters meant that California is going to turn red. He said this should finish off Gavin Newsom and Karen Bass, and their political careers are over because of their handling of the fires. And Trump is certainly taking advantage of that discontent for his political purposes.
All right. That is Faith Pino, our reporter with Los Angeles Times, talking with us from Washington and the inauguration today of Donald J. Trump as the 47th president. Faith, thank you so much. Stay warm.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
You bet. Marisa, obviously the fires getting very politicized. And this is not the first time. We saw it happen when Trump was president the first time with Jerry Brown and Gavin Newsom. We're going to come up on a break, but I know we're going to come back and talk about how California is going to be affected potentially by this. And we would love to hear from you. What are you feeling about today's inauguration? What are your hopes for the next Trump administration? How do you think the next 4 years under President Trump will affect your daily life and your community? Give us a call now at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your comments and questions to politics@kqed.org. And as always, you can find us on social media, Blue Sky, Instagram. We're at KQED. Much more to come. And welcome back to this Inauguration Day special from KQED and the California Newsroom. I'm Scott Schaefer, here with Marisa Lagos, KQED's California Politics and Government Desk. And we very much would love to hear from you as well. What are your thoughts about today's inauguration and the next 4 years? What are you most optimistic or concerned about for you or your community or your family? Give us a call, 866-733-6786. And we're going to go to Sally in Los Angeles first. Sally, welcome.
Hi,
go right ahead.
Okay, well, as your listeners have already heard, we've just suffered catastrophic wildfires, destroying over 12,000 structures, mostly single-family homes, thanks to the climate crisis. I live in a state and a city with immigrants and refugees from around the world. They are part of our life here. When our 6.7 magnitude Northridge earthquake woke us up at 4:30 in the morning 31 years ago last Friday, I was working for the City of Los Angeles Housing Department. That disaster severely damaged over 20,000 homes in our city alone and hundreds of thousands around the region. And we worked overtime to help the city recover and rebuild over several years. We could only do that with a strong partnership of the federal government, the Clinton administration, a supportive Congress, and the Department of Housing and Urban Development, Transportation, and other agencies. And I'm really concerned about this president and Congress. Are they going to support our long-term recovery, as has always been the case in every federally declared disaster? Right now, my tax dollars are helping victims of hurricanes Helene and Milton.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Sally, that is a great point. And we've heard that, Marisa Lagos, that notion of, well, they're targeting California right now, suggesting that Governor Newsom needs to sign some policies around water in order as kind of a quid pro quo. Have a hard time thinking they would do the same thing in Florida or North Carolina after a hurricane.
Yeah, and I think we really need to wait and see for what Trump and this Congress actually do. I mean, the other side of that coin is they're talking about tying this disaster aid in the future to the debt limit, which actually would help Trump and Republicans because they need Democratic votes, right? That's not actually an attempt to punish California. That's an attempt to sort of fold in a policy that some of their far right members won't go for, which is this like lifting of the debt limit. And so, you know, I do think we've seen a lot of threats. I've been reporting on this over the past 2 weeks. We heard the president say over the weekend that he will probably come to California this week, visit these wildfires. I do think there's a lot of even Republican members of Congress in California and beyond who see some danger in those types of conditions. So we'll see. I mean, a lot of what he's said the governor needs to sign doesn't actually exist. This proclamation he's talking about is, I mean, what Trump is really wants is that the governor and leaders in Sacramento allow more water to flow to Central Valley Farms. Has zero to do with LA's water supply. So I don't really know how those conversations are going to progress.
Well, and it's a great reminder, too, that as Trump says things, not to be too obsessed with what he says, because it may not be grounded in reality or in the issue that he's talking about. Let's go to Frank Stoltz, reporter covering civics and democracy. He's a correspondent with LAist. Frank, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Well, what's your reaction to the speech today? There was, you know, one of the things you do, of the many things you do, is to cover criminal justice and law and order. What are your thoughts about what you heard in the president's speech this morning and some of the initial executive actions we're hearing about?
Yeah, well, I, like everybody else in Los Angeles, was mostly listening for whether or not the fire aid will come through and whether or not the president will tie strings to any aid, which you guys were just talking about. And you have to remember, I mean, this is a president who said to Gavin Newsom, we won't give him any money to put out the fires. And if we don't give him the money to put out the fires, he's got problems. He's a lousy governor. He's really politicized this this issue. And this is a huge concern to still fire ravaged L.A. As we know, President Biden initially said that he would cover all expenses for disaster aid for the next 180 days. It's unclear whether or not President Trump would or could even reverse that. But there's going to be a far more need for aid in Southern California and particularly Los Angeles with the fires.
Well, and it's a reminder, too, Frank, that there is this tightrope that elected officials have to walk. I mean, you've got, and we'll be hearing from the Attorney General, Rob Bonta, you know, Governor Newsom, Karen Bass, the mayor of Los Angeles. You know, they can be critical when it's appropriate, but at the same time, they really need federal aid, and they just can't afford to get too far off, you know, off the reservation when it comes to having a relationship with him.
Yeah. And Mayor Bass and the chair of the LA County Board of Supervisors, Catherine Barger, both said in the past few days that they reached out to Trump administration officials even before he was inaugurated, you know, expressing a desire to work with them get the aid to those who are in need. And you have to remember 12,000 structures, 27 dead. This is a massive disaster in Los Angeles, and it's on the top of everybody's mind. In any case, local officials have said they've reached out, that they hadn't heard back yet, but that they're confident, as you're sort of suggesting, that they're you know, reaching out with an olive branch and confident that they'll get the aid.
You know, Frank mentioned those comments that Trump made in September during the campaign. I think it is important to go back. And the reason that I am questioning, you know, how seriously to take Trump is that we have seen sort of appeals to his ego work before, back in 2017 or 2018, the Paradise campfire. Trump came out, toured that with Governor then Jerry Brown and a Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom. He did end up giving that aid, even though a few years, you know, I think that same year he had basically said internally, according to reporting by Politico, that he wasn't going to give California aid for fires. And then after Newsom called him, Kevin McCarthy, the former congressman from the Central Valley, a former leader, called and appealed to him. He did. We also heard that he was shown, you know, vote totals for Orange County, and that helped change his mind to show that, you know, people did vote for him there. So I think for him, not for congressional Republicans as much, there's so many questions about what you can do to appeal to him. And I do think our governor is very aware of that.
And Frank Stoltz, of course, he got many votes from Los Angeles, and many of his major donors live in Los Angeles. You'd think they would be talking to him about, you know, helping the recovery effort.
Well, many donors live in the Pacific Palisades, which, you know, obviously has been one of the huge areas of the disaster. So, yeah, and you have Republican members of Congress also saying that you shouldn't play politics with disaster aid. At the same time, Speaker Mike Johnson saying that there should be strings attached, but very vague. You know, is it about the water? Is it about the forest management?
Raking the forest, Frank. I mean, who knows, right?
Right. wanting to see Gavin Newsom with a rake out in the forest. The other thing I'm watching closely in this administration, of course, are the immigration raids. And that's tied to the fire aid in some ways, because, you know, a huge number of construction workers and day laborers are undocumented immigrants. And there's going to be a huge demand for them in the coming weeks and months.
Yeah.
And, you know, how aggressive will the Trump administration be in Los Angeles in terms of targeting people for mass deportation?
No question. And we'll be talking more about that in later in the hour. Frank Stoltz, civics and democracy correspondent for LAS. Thanks as always, Frank. Good to hear from you.
All right. Thank you. Thanks.
Let's go down to the phones and Arlene in San Luis Obispo down on the Central Coast. Welcome.
Thank you. Been listening. It's really an interesting conversation. I first want to say that Trump's hyperbolic and bombastic style causes admirers as well as detractors some angst. However, I believe he will come through for California. I think the role of the government is to protect the citizenry and provide a pathway to prosperity for the citizens. And I think if Trump can fulfill his campaign promises, he will provide stimulant to raise wages and he'll calm the overseas. And I do think he'll bring the nation together eventually after 4 years. So thank you for having me speak today.
Arlene, thank you so much for that. We appreciate that. And Mauricio Lagos, you know, he did talk, President Trump, about returning wealth to the people. And, of course, these tax breaks that were enacted when he was president the first time are about to expire. And Elon Musk and others would greatly benefit from the extension of those tax breaks. And others in California, we might say, who make a lot of money.
Yeah, it was pretty striking to see Elon Musk directly behind the Trump family at this event. I think that that's going to be kind of one of the more fascinating internal questions for Republicans. You know, a lot of the more hard right members and more conservative members do not want to see an increase to the national debt. So those tax cuts, the extension of them is going to require very deep cuts to federal spending. And then also there's kind of this ongoing fight. You know, I mentioned the debt ceiling. The folks who came up with this plan to tie disaster aid to that are the members from these high cost blue states, Republicans from these high cost blue states,
New Jersey, New York, California,
who want to see these state and local tax deductions restored. That has made it a lot more expensive to, say, own a home in places like that. And so I think you're going to see a lot of tension between members of the Republican caucus over some of the things that Trump wants to do with the budget and with those tax cuts.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And again, the number, if you want to call us, is 866-733-6786. And let's go to Barbara in Fresno. Welcome.
Yes, I just want to say that the next 4 years are going to be a very dark period for our country. And as a Mexican-American, I'm very concerned about the new immigration policy. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. And of course, Marisa, we don't know yet exactly what these executive actions or these so-called deportation raids are going to lead to. There are many mixed status families, certainly in California, but in other parts of the country as well, where some people are here legally, some may have been born here and are citizens. And it's causing no doubt a lot of anxiety for those folks and maybe, you know, people who know them, their friends, their family, their employers.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen even, I think, for, you know, elected officials and others. I know the school district here in San Francisco has sent out notices to families to talk about how they're preparing for potential immigration action. There's really some big sort of outstanding question marks about how they will do this and how sort of widespread it'll be. We've seen Tom Holman, the so-called immigration czar under the new Trump administration, say over the weekend that, you know, these won't be sort of massive raids, that they will be targeted at folks who have criminal records. Even before Trump got sworn in, the Border Patrol was hundreds of miles away from the border in the Central Valley, undertaking some of these targeted actions. So yes, big question marks. And I think, you know, for a lot of people in, as you said, mixed status families and others, just a lot of anxiety. I do want to mention, Scott, we haven't seen these executive orders actually be signed yet because Trump just spent a very long time talking kind of off the cuff after his inaugural speech to other supporters. But one of the things he's promising to do is to sign an executive order to, quote, end birthright citizenship. That's going to kick off a huge legal fight. That's, of course, enshrined in the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. So I do think we're going to see a kind of repeat of Trump 1.0, where a lot of these attempts to curb immigration are going to end up directly in court, basically within days.
Right. Although this time around, unlike 2017, he does seem to have his loyalists in place. And he has thought a lot with Project 2025, although he distanced himself from that, about what some of these specific orders and actions might look like. But we'll have to wait and see exactly what comes from the White House, from his desk in the coming days and weeks. Let's go now to San Diego. And Joy, you're next. Welcome.
Oh, hi. I live in San Diego, and I am very concerned about his language and as well as his actions, because his language for underrepresented groups or they're dangerous. I go to a welcoming and affirming church in the Hillcrest area that has immigrants, that has transgender members, and there's a lot of fear that his words and many of them lies about these groups cause.
Let's hear a little bit about what he said in his inaugural address about transgender folks.
It will henceforth be the official policy of the United States government that there are only two genders, male and female.
That comment, Joy, did get a lot of applause there. I'm wondering, do you know people who are trans or LGBTQ in general that are concerned about their own safety or that of their families?
They are. The church that I go to is in the Hillcrest neighborhood, and which is a strongly gay community. And there were drive-by shootings. They were, you know, pellet guns, but still, you know, there's the shootings. And I have to admit that, and I'm not in the LGBT community, but I strongly support, I'm a progressive Christian, and that's the church I chose. But these are people who I have never seen such strong faith. And when they're trying to find a church after many being kicked out of, they turn to their God and their faith. And so also we have some projects with immigrants in Tijuana. And his language, it has consequences. So when he talks about free speech, I think there's going to be an increase of hate speech and hate crimes. He's feeding on fear, and I guess that hate people that people have for people who are different. I just I don't know. I'm very, very sad and discouraged about it all.
All right, Joy. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. Much appreciated. Marisa Lagos, of course, these issues played out in California at school boards in places like Temecula and San Bernardino, even here in the Bay Area. And, you know, as the caller said, these words do matter, but sometimes the words lead to elections and recalls at school board levels and other places. So it's not just the language.
Yeah. And I think that there's also just like, what does it send to have the highest elected person in the United States attacking what is really, what, 1-2% of the population? We've already seen a lot of fallout, as you mentioned, from a political standpoint. But I think there's a lot of fear in the trans community that even if you're not directly affected by some of the things he says he's going to do, like, you know, removing protections for trans people in federal prisons or in immigration centers, just that by virtue of him talking about this, by attacking the trans community, that it will lead to other people sort of doing the same. And I think, you know, we're going to be waiting to see too, like, how some of this, you know, the idea of, you know, saying in federal law that there's only two genders, what does that do to federal workers, for example?
Exactly. Talked a lot today about immigration and border security. Let's hear a short clip of that.
All illegal entry will immediately be halted, and we will begin the process of returning millions and millions of criminal aliens back to the places from which they came. We will reinstate my remain in Mexico policy.
And ironically, things at the border have been quite quiet. And a lot of the policies that President Biden, former now President Biden, put in place really calmed the flow of migrants to the border. But let's bring in Gustavo Solis, investigative border reporter with KPBS in San Diego. Hey, Gustavo.
Hello.
So what are your quick thoughts about, you know, what you heard today and what it might mean in the coming days and weeks in terms of border security, raids, and that sort of thing?
Well, actually, the biggest bit of news coming out today is something that wasn't talked about in the inaugural address, and that's the end of the CBP One Border app. This is the app Biden introduced for people in Mexico that they can schedule appointments to request asylum in the U.S. and come in legally.
Yeah. Gustavo, I'm sorry to interrupt you. We're going to bring you back. Hold that thought. We need to come up on a break, but we want to return to that. And I want to remind everybody, you're listening to an Inauguration Day special from KQED in the California Newsroom. If you want to join us, it's 866-733-6786. I'm Scott Schaefer. Welcome back to this Inauguration Day special from KQED and the California Newsroom, our public radio partners throughout the state of California. Just as we came up upon the break, we were talking to investigative border reporter Gustavo Solis. He will be back in a moment. But right now, we are joined by the Attorney General of California, Rob Bonta. Rob Bonta, welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So Governor Newsom and you have made it clear that legal action is really going to be front and center, the legislature allocating additional money for your office to file lawsuits and so on. What are you looking for? What are you prioritizing as we begin to see what some of these executive actions are?
At a high level, we're looking at compliance,
rule of law, or a failure to do so by the Trump administration. That's our North Star, whether Trump administration is following the law or not. We think based on what he has projected he would do, what he has stated he would do, what his inner circle has
indicates that there are a number of different areas where he will likely take action based on his promises and commitments, and he, in taking that action, is likely to be breaking the law. So in the immigration setting, we're looking at an attack on birthright citizenship. We're looking at invoking very old laws to justify use of the military or use of the National Guard to be involved in immigration enforcement. We're looking at potential conditioning of grants to the state of California on revocation of sanctuary jurisdiction status. We also have the reproductive freedom space, use of the Comstock Act to attack abortion medication, a potential abortion ban, attack on FDA authority to approve abortion medication in other areas, attacks on the LGBTQ plus community, on diversity, equity, and inclusion.
So that's a very long list right there, obviously. And I'm wondering, you know, there are other attorneys general from blue states. We saw this 2017 to 2021. Now it's, you know, where it was the red state attorneys general. Now the blue states are playing defense again. I'm wondering, how do you prioritize things? Does each state kind of take a topic area? I mean, California obviously is a border state. Some of these other states are not.
We distribute and share the load and try to put the issues in the and match them with the attorney general offices that have the most expertise and institutional knowledge and focus on those areas. So we know that one state can't do it all. We can do a lot as state of California. We have in the past, and we will again. We'll have a disproportionate load, as we always do, but we work as a team with our other attorneys general. So we have certain states taking the lead on certain issues. Certainly when it comes to something like birthright citizenship, we'll be very directly involved since we have the most immigrants in the United States by far on any immigrant rights issue. We'll be focused. Reproductive freedom, will be working closely with other states and taking a lead role as well. But yeah, we do distribute the issues among the states based on interest, expertise, and institutional knowledge.
The immediate concern, of course, for Southern California is the disaster aid, which Trump has threatened to withhold unless certain things are done by the governor. Is there any role for the attorney general in that kind of an issue? Or is that something that, you know, you need to maybe enlist members of Congress, including Republicans, to lobby the president, as well as his donors and, you know, people in Silicon Valley? I mean, there are others who can get to him on these things, right?
I think that's an all hands on deck issue. That's an all California issue. It you know, bipartisan. It's about a disaster that we are suffering from here in Southern California. And there's a time honored tradition of the federal government giving federal aid immediately without conditions, and regardless of the partisan leanings of the state. President Biden did that. He gave aid after hurricanes in Texas and Florida to those red states. He had no concern whether they're red states or not. All he cared about was that there were Americans there. That's all that Mr. Trump should care about. But yes, our congressional delegation will be very important. The Republicans have called for unconditional aid on this issue. Our role in LA has largely been focused on the rule of law, things like price gouging and looting and scams and frauds.
Also, of course, abortion rights are going to be a big issue as well. And Marisa, you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, I just did want to loop back on the immigration stuff. Attorney General Bonta, Marisa Lagos here. You know, we've seen now the Trump administration say that as part of these executive orders, they want to do things like return to the Remain in Mexico policy, kind of reinstate some of the things that Trump did during his first term, I believe largely in conjunction with the COVID-19 pandemic. A lot of these issues have been litigated. I'm curious, like, do you feel that the low level of current border crossings is going to hamper his ability to do any of this? Like, how do you see that playing out?
I think the key here is going to be what he does, what authority he has to do it, and if he does it the right way, using budget that is appropriate for that proposed action. He has shown a tendency and a proclivity during the Trump administration 1.0 and based on the way he conducts himself generally, to do what he wants, when he wants, how he wants. And that doesn't always work within a constitutional republic where there's rules and a constitution, procedures to follow, where there's a separation of powers and different branches of government. So it will depend on what he does and how he does it. There certainly is a significant amount of authority in the office of the president, but it is far from unlimited, and he has to follow the rule of law. So we'll see what he does and how he does it. He tripped quite often over the Administrative Procedure Act in Trump Administration 1.0, which requires a certain process for rulemaking within the executive branch. He didn't seem to have the patience or the recognition of the importance of following that rule. So we'll watch closely to see what he does and how he does it.
All right. That is California Attorney General Rob Bonta. You're going to be very busy over the next 4 years, I imagine. Thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, as always.
Let's go back to Gustavo Solis, investigative border reporter for KPBS. Gustavo, my apologies for cutting you off there. We had to get to a break. I'm curious, though, you're in San Diego, obviously a big border crossing area. What are you hearing from, from employers, from elected officials, from families, from immigrant rights groups about the possible crackdown on the border and raids and all the rest?
Yeah, well, but as you have said before, migration is down, right? Border apprehensions, border encounters here in San Diego and across the southern border are down. So I think it's important to recognize the fact that Trump inherited a pretty quiet border. I think the numbers are down to lower than they were before the pandemic. But with that said, the thing that is high is anxiety and fear, especially after that Border Patrol operation out of Bakersfield. We've seen people here in San Diego take to social media every time they see a Border Patrol vehicle in a neighborhood. Not necessarily because there's an action. You know, we're San Diego, we're the border. You see Border Patrol often driving down the highway, stopping at taco shops for lunch. It's pretty normal. But given the high level of anxiety, people see it and they turn to social media and say, hey, avoid this area, we're concerned. Outside of that, we've heard really since Trump won the election, there's been reports of children don't want to go to school because they're concerned that their parents may be taken away while they're in school. There's been some folks, especially after Bakersfield, who are not going to work and reported skipping shifts and kind of lying low for a while to see what, if anything, comes out within the first few weeks and months of the administration.
What about from over the border? What are you hearing from people, like, say, in Tijuana?
Yeah, well, a couple things. One, migrant shelter operators say they are not prepared, not necessarily because more migrants are coming north, but for the event of mass deportations. Tijuana would be one of the cities most impacted by large numbers of Mexican nationals being sent back, and the shelters are worried that they don't have capacity for it. And as I was saying before the break earlier, one of the biggest, most impactful bits of news to come out today is the Trump administration canceling CBP-1 for asylum seekers. We've already seen images of social media of people who had been waiting in Mexico months, 6, 7, 8, 9 months for an appointment to come legally and request asylum. Finally, they get their day, their opportunity to cross into the U.S. They get the rug pulled out from under them, saying, nope, sorry, as of right now, no more appointments. Good luck to you. And people breaking down, crying, throwing themselves on the floor. You see the real human impact that these decisions coming out of Washington, D.C. are already having.
And Marisa, we, of course, in California, we have enormous reliance on immigrants, migrants. I mean, Central Valley, agriculture up here in Napa, the wine industry, service industry. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And you do wonder, like, when we hear this rhetoric and plans for raids and so on, what impact it's going to have on the economy.
Right. And I think that what I have heard and many of our colleagues have heard when they're out talking to people who, you know, run farms, run businesses, not just in California, but really across the nation who depend on immigrant labor, is that they don't, Trump supporters, at least in those industries, don't necessarily think he's going to crack down maybe as hard as he has promised, that there might be maybe some sort of grace given to farm workers or things like that. I mean, I don't think we know yet where things will go, but it's very interesting that you have people, you know, I had Representative Zoe Lofgren tell me that she had the same experience in her district when she was out campaigning, that just a lot of people within the agricultural community do not take Trump at his word that he will actually be, you know, sort of putting in place these wide ranging raids that would cripple their industries. And we're going to have to wait and see. I mean, again, I do think that you have to remember that this is a person who is very much sort of seems to be influenced by the last person he talked to, and does, I think, take less hardline views when he is appealed to by somebody who supports him or who he's on good terms with. I mean, we've seen a real turnaround, let's say, on a completely different issue, on the TikTok ban, right? I mean, Trump said that he supported that in his first term, and has now promised to essentially repeal it unilaterally. I think we're going to have to see what that looks like from a legal perspective. But this is, you know, this is not somebody who is cut in the mold of a sort of traditional Republican who came in, you know, with values that he wasn't willing to sort of rethink if he somebody made a better case to him.
All right, we're going to let Gustavo go. That is Gustavo Solis, investigative border reporter with KPBS. Gustavo, lots of work for you to do as well, I'm sure, in the coming weeks. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Lots of comments from our listeners, including this: Trump's cabinet selections are, to me, the most troubling. There are none that aren't willing to do his bidding rather than what is in the best interest of the United States. There are smart people that are so hungry to be in positions of power, they have lost their moral compass. This time around, there will be very few people standing in his way. And this from another listener: I'm afraid he's going to be a dictator in disguise and oligarchy with Musk and Zuckerberg, two of the CEOs from Silicon Valley and the tech industry who were there today with the president and very much a part of his inner circle. You're listening to a statewide inauguration special from the California Newsroom and KQED. I'm Scott Schaefer. And let's go back to the phones. And Noah in Oakland, I think we're going to go over to the East Bay next. Noah, welcome.
Hello. Thank you. My biggest feeling today, I have no love for Trump and the Republicans, but my biggest feeling today is severe disappointment in Democratic Party elites who have brought us here again. We've seen them make statements about what they care about and then go back on them in policy, which feels like lies to me. Joe Biden said no new drilling on federal land and then approved a massive ConocoPhillips development in the Alaskan wilderness. He said he was going to be the most pro-union president ever, and then he broke a rail strike because he was afraid of Americans being mad about their holiday shopping. He told us that they were going to codify Roe v. Wade into law, and then every single time they failed to do this. And I heard on this very program a Democratic strategist come on and explain that their strategy is a politics of fear, that people do not go to the polls because they think they're going to get something. They go to the polls because they're afraid of losing something. And they have lost on this for the last 12 years. It is really pathetic.
Yeah, well, I can hear in your voice, Noah, the concern, the fury that you you feel about this. And I know you're not alone. Thank you for sharing that. We're in day one, actually, like hour two or three of his presidency. There's going to be a lot to keep an eye on, and you can certainly be sure we'll be doing that. Let's go back to the phones now, and Joshua. Josh, welcome. Oh, Josh Yeager. I'm sorry. Josh Yeager. Oh, hey, Josh. Josh Yeager is a Kern County reporter with KVPR. Thanks for joining us. So Kern County, Josh, is one of the places where we've been hearing reports about ICE agents coming up from the border to do raids. What can you tell us about that?
Well, actually, it wasn't ICE agents. It was Border Patrol agents, which is one of the really unusual things about this operation that happened here in Kern County and around Bakersfield earlier this month. Border Patrol agents arrested 78 people, they said, immigrants here, mainly around fields, at gas stations, places where farm workers and other undocumented laborers tend to congregate. And that's really sent a lot of anxiety and fear through the community. I should say that the Border Patrol says that those arrests were targeted. They pointed to a number of alleged criminal activities that some of those arrested had committed. But immigrants tell me that many of those arrested were basically just normal, you know, hardworking people who were swept up. And so that's caused a lot of anxiety and fear for our communities here.
Yeah. And what are you hearing anything from employers? As I said a moment ago, Maurice and I were talking about how dependent the economy is on labor from Mexico, Central America, all over the world, really.
Absolutely. I mean, here in the Central Valley, we grow a majority of the fresh fruits and vegetables that people across the country eat. And that's only possible really by undocumented labor. I mean, it's hard to come by official estimates, but as many as 70% of farm workers here in the Central Valley could be undocumented. And we've heard from farmers here that in the wake of these sweeps, many, many farm workers have chosen to stay home out of fear of deportation. And we're in the middle of the mandarin harvest right now. Hmm. And it's kind of put a pinch, some farmers have told us, on that harvest.
We have a comment from this listener who writes, "I'm worried about my neighbors who are undocumented and about my godson now in his 40s. Who was our neighbor from Vietnam. He was incarcerated when he was 18 for a year due to a property crime. Because he was once incarcerated for a year as an 18-year-old, I'm afraid he will be targeted for deportation by Trump." And Marisa Lagos, that is exactly the kind of person that seems to be prioritized in this first round of threatened deportations.
Yeah, and I think that this is, again, one area that even people who don't support Trump polls show do sort of overwhelmingly as Americans think that folks with criminal records should be deported. You know, I think from a political perspective, the challenge for the Trump administration and for those who oppose them is going to be sort of as this happens. I think the idea of something is very different than when you have individual stories and you have, you know, we saw last time people who had pretty minor offenses decades ago being deported to countries they had never really lived in, right? That they left when they were so young. Questions about folks who are dreamers and those sorts of situations. Is there a way for the left and folks who oppose these immigration policies to make the case that this is not what America actually wants that is making it safer?
And Josh Yeager, of course, Kern County went for Donald Trump in a big way, 59%. Do you think, real quick, is that, you know, something that they thought about when they voted for him so overwhelmingly? Real quick.
Absolutely. I mean, as you said, this Kern County is a conservative bastion here in California. And I know we've talked a lot about fear and anxiety in this program, but there's also a lot of excitement and hope. Okay. People are really counting on Trump to turn the economy around.
Josh Yeager, Kern County reporter with KVPR. Josh, thanks so much for joining us. Sorry to rush you there at the end.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, Scott.
That is going to do it for our statewide inauguration special. It was produced in partnership with the California Newsroom, a collaboration of California's public radio stations, NPR, and CalMatters. Our engineer was Brendan Willard, and our producers were Tessa Paoli and Dan Zoll. Ethan Tovin Lindsay, and Molly Solomon helped coordinate and produce this coverage with assistance from Tony Marcano and the California Newsroom. I'm Scott Schaefer.